ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 102 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a real special interview to share with you. My very first with a creator from Valiant Comics. It's Robert Venditti, who is working on X-O Manowar, and he has a lot of interesting things to say about the character and about the company, including the upcoming Unity event. So I'm sure you're going to listen to that. Then I have comic reviews, followed by news and previews. And everything wraps up with my take on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. pilot. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Talking today with Robert Venditti, the creator of such good things as The Surrogates and working on X-O Manowar and Green Lantern. How are you doing today, Rob?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's good to talk with you. I wanted to say how much I enjoyed The Surrogates, which was a fun book. I love the whole sci-fi concept of it. And I was reading on your website that you were talking about possibly doing a third chapter for that.
Yeah, this story was always intended to be three graphic novels, and Brett Welding and I have done the first two, and I already know what the story is for the third one, so we'll get around to it someday, but who can say when that'll happen.
Mm-hmm. But it's such a great story. I loved it so much, and I enjoyed the movie, and I saw that you liked the movie that they did, too. It must have been really quite a pleasure to see your story on the big screen.
Oh, yeah, I had a lot of fun with it, for sure. That was my first book, so it was a pretty crazy thing to have happen, you know?
right out of the gate with that. Now, you moved on to X-O Manowar and when Valiant came back up, and I thought that was quite an interesting character and stuff. What was it about Eric that you found interesting as a character?
I really liked the high concept of the character. You know, he's this 5th century Visigoth that gets kidnapped by aliens and taken into space, and when he escapes their suit of highly advanced armor and returns to Earth, it's the modern day. Mm-hmm. So he's the most primitive and the most technologically advanced person on the planet at the same time. And I just like the high concept of that and the mashup of historical and science fiction.
Yeah, just great stuff. Did you get to read the original X-O Manowar when they came out in the early 90s?
No, I actually didn't start reading comics until I was in my late 20s and around the year 2000. So when Valiant reached out to me, I actually had no familiarity with Valiant or X-O Manowar or any of their characters, really. So... I have read the entire series now, but I did that after I was hired.
Okay, that's cool. I was just curious, going to ask you about how you got to do this stuff. I guess Valiant, that they were aware of what you'd done in the past?
Yeah, Warren Simons, the executive editor of Valiant, he had read Surrogates, a few years back, and he had really liked it. And so when X-O Manowar, when Valiant was going to relaunch their company, he reached out to me, not specifically about X-O Manowar, but just about pitching really for any of their characters. And after reading up on them, there was a lot that I liked, but X-O Manowar was the one that seemed the most interesting and the most unique to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really liked the character. I had, I've been reading comics a long time, so I had read those early ones. And the thing I find interesting about your take on them is it's a lot darker, which is funny to say. They had a barbarian inside like an Iron Man outfit, and they more treated him like he was somebody who was just sort of out of time, just somebody placed. It was sort of almost funny at times.
Mm-hmm.
But you've taken a much darker look at it, and I like that. I think that, especially for today's audiences, that darker take is a great thing.
Yeah, I wanted to, update it for the modern audience, but also I didn't want him to be buffoonish or anything, I wanted him to be... just because he comes from a time in the past, it doesn't mean he was stupid. He might not understand how things work necessarily in our modern context, but he still can be a smart, thinking individual, which he would be as the nephew of of the king of the Visigoths, you know, he would be potentially one of the smartest. So I wanted to try to reflect that in the new take.
Yeah, I've loved the books. They've all been great fun to read, all your Exo Manowars. And I just think it's such a great way to bring back a character. I always think there are no bad characters. There's only bad takes on characters. And so I kind of think you've done a great job with Exo Manowar, making him something that we can relate to today.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I've been working on it for, I guess, 2 years now, and I've put a lot of effort into it. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, I also enjoy that you've gone back and made touch with the original aliens. You've dealt a lot more with them than they ever did in the original series, too. And I like the way you've done that. You've kind of made them – there's castes amongst the aliens, and I like the way that they're divided up. You've got the warriors, and you've got the religious groups and stuff like that. And they don't even get along a lot of the time. I like that.
Yeah, you know, we updated the aliens a lot. It's actually a completely different race and a completely different take on the aliens, I think, in a lot of ways than the original series had. And so, you know, we've done a lot of different things there. And that was one of the aspects of the series I spent the most time on, is I really wanted to flesh out the antagonist and make it somebody that was equal to the task of going up against a character like Exo Manowar.
I'm kind of curious because it feels to me like it's a parable about what's going on in society today. Do you see that? Was that kind of the way you set it up, or was it just a sort of a timeless idea of how this works?
Yeah, I don't know about parable, but I do definitely try to tie in whatever I'm working on with themes that will apply to the you know, whatever's currently going on in the world. And I think it just makes it something that people are able to relate to more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure one thing that Eric would have liked to have done was go back into the past with this armor and change history. But the good news is he can't really do that, because it'd be a very different history if he did.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a good thing about that. The concept of a barbarian in armor to me still rings out to me. Because, you know, so often we see superheroes and they're all very, you know, upright and very moral. And you've got a barbarian who has some of that, but the way that he looks at things is so different from the rest of us that it makes him stand out as a character. Did you kind of think about him as a barbarian and how he would react to all these situations?
Yeah, you know, just what it would be like for him to be a man out of time and more so just reacting to things in the world the way that he would be accustomed to reacting to because of the time that he comes from, you know? So I think that's kind of the fine line that we walk. You know, he does a lot of things that might be questionable by today's standards, but as long as you keep him true to the background that he knows and where he comes from, and you stay true to the character, I think that you're able to still have somebody who's heroic, just maybe not heroic in the way that, you know, modern day would normally view him as such.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a fish out of water.
Yeah, very much so.
And in a way, I like, because, you know, we have to reexamine our own values because we see him taking a different tack on things. So for me, it's a great challenge to how I think about things. When I see how he talks about it and how he views things, I think, you know, there's some truth to what he's saying. He's not necessarily just out of it. He's very much weighing what's happened to him. And there's a lot of validity to what he says.
Sure, yeah. And that all goes back to what I was saying, you know, staying true to the era that he comes from and living by the I guess the code and the standards that he would have grown up with and would have been taught to live under and be an honorable person from his own time, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just wonder, over time, is he going to evolve as a character? Do you have places that you think he'll be going?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We have a very long-term approach to the character, you know, and there's a lot of those kinds of things that are going to be happening down the line, and he's, you know, about to learn some pretty hard lessons coming up in the next few issues when Exo Manowar ends up crossing over with Unity when the new Unity book launches.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that because I think that's kind of an interesting thing. There was a Unity event back in the original days.
Yeah, it was a big moment in the original Valiant universe. It was a huge storyline, and mm-hmm. I think not just for Valiant, but for the comics industry as a whole. You know, it was kind of an important moment, and this is a very different story, you know, and Unity means something very different in this new story than it did in the old Valiant universe, but, you know, it's still something that's going to be very impactful and have a legacy in terms of not just the Unity book and the Exo Manowar book, but the Valiant universe as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And I'm interested because I've seen the trailer for it, and it kind of looks like Exo Manowar is the Eric is the bad guy in this, at least for part of it.
I think it depends on how you look at it, but yeah, you know, he came back to Earth with his people that he saved from slavery. You know, he found a bunch of humans on Loam, the alien homeworld, humans of different cultures, but all that have been enslaved for centuries, and he's brought them back to Earth, and he's sort of taken over Romania because Romania is the ancestral homelands of the Visigoths, you know, the land that Eric and his family were in when they were expelled by the Huns, you know, back in the late 4th century. So he's going back to his homeland with his weapon, and he's taking it back for his people. And again, that goes back to just having him react to things according to the code that, you know, the way things were done from the era that he lived in. You know, he's not doing anything wrong. You know, 16 centuries ago, everything he's doing would be exactly right. It's just we view it now differently.
That's so interesting, because that does make sense for him to go and do those kinds of things, because, you know, as somebody from that era and who kind of views himself as a leader, he's going to go back in there and take over that. That is such a great concept. I love that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, is Unity going to be a separate? I understand it's going to come out in November. You're going to still have Exo Manowar coming out at the same time that Unity's coming out. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. Unity is a brand new series. It's going to be an ongoing series, and Exo Manowar will continue. So.
Oh, that's great. I'm so happy that Valiant is doing so well, to be honest, because I never think that we should just be limited to one or two companies. I always, when I go around looking for stuff, I look at the concept, and then I buy based on whether I think it's going to be interesting or not. So for me, the previews, which I refer to as the phone book, is where I go through and kind of figure out which ones I'm going to be interested in as time goes along. And I remember when Valiant first came out, I was looking, oh man, I love those characters. I really did. I always loved in the Harbingers, you had the heavyset woman is the one who can fly. I thought that was such a great...
Sure, yeah. And Josh Dysart is doing a great job on Harbinger right now. It's one of my favorite books.
Yeah, so much fun. See, that's the thing about Valiant that I like, is that you guys are doing very different takes on all this stuff. And it's different from anything else that's out there in the marketplace. And I hope that the whole company does so well that, you know, you guys rise up there and challenge DC and Marvel at some point. I really hope. So it'd be great. So, well, why don't we move on to other stuff that you're doing for just a couple minutes? I wanted to talk about Green Lantern some, because you took over from Geoff Johns, and that must have been quite a challenge. You know, what was your reaction? Did they ask you, or did you submit something to DC? How did that work?
Well, they asked me to pitch for it, yeah, and then I turned in a pitch that I submitted, and I imagine there were other people pitching for it as well. I really don't know, but, you know, yeah, it is – coming in after, you know, Geoff Johns. He's obviously one of the most significant creators, both creatively and commercially, of, you know, the last decade. So those are very big shoes to fill, and shoes that really can't be filled. And so I try not to concentrate on those things and just focus on telling the kind of stories I like to tell the way I know how to tell them, and hope the audience enjoys it.
Well, one thing I always thought, and I think Mr. Johns would even agree with this, is that other people, other writers can come up with great ideas and do things that are interesting, not just him. And so I always like to think you're taking Hal Jordan where no Green Lantern has gone before. And I like that because, you know, the whole concept of Relic and all the things that are going on in there, the shaking up of the Lantern Corps and all this other good stuff, is such a nice change of pace for me. I really like it. And I know a lot of people who were tempted to give up after Mr. Johns left. And I said, no, give it a chance. You know, just because Geoff Johns is not writing, it doesn't mean it's not going to be good. And I really like what you've been doing with it. It has that science fiction feel again that you've brought to other stuff. I really like in that, because a lot of times with Mr. Johns, and as much as he's one of my very favorite writers, but sometimes the science fiction element loses a little when he's more focused on character. But I like the way you're bringing in science fiction to it, and I like Relic as a character and as a villain and stuff like that. I think you all have done a great job of building him up. Where did Relic come from? Was that something that you had as a concept before Green Lantern, or when you got was that something that you pitched to them?
Yeah, no, it was something I pitched to them. You know, it was reading all of Geoff Johns' run and learning about this, you know, really great mythology he built up with the emotional spectrum and all the various core. It was just a thought that occurred to me, you know, where does this light come from? And what if there was a reservoir of it somewhere, and what would happen if that ran out? And, you know, again, trying to tie it in with themes that, you know, you see going on in the world around you, you know, and try to make it something that readers can relate to in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like Green Lantern as a character. I'm drawn to people like Eric and to like Hal Jordan and stuff, and to Batman, because I like the people who are average people or normal people or could be normal people who have other things that makes them special. I'm not from Krypton. I'm not invulnerable. I can't relate to that as much as I can to Green Lantern with the ring or Eric with the armor. And so to me, I just like the whole character of that and how they react to when they get this abilities. What do they do? Do they change as people, or does it bring out the best or the worst in them? So I always look at these as sort of parables of how we would do, and I guess I like the parable concept. But as far as Green Lantern goes and Hal, having him in charge, I think, is something he hasn't really done before in the comics. So I think you're taking him places that that are fun, and I think will stretch the character quite a lot.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, you know, trying to have him go up against conflicts that sort of go against his nature and see how he reacts in those situations, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, Hal is a longtime character, and of course he was a villain for a while, and I'm that whole business I wish I could forget, because it was quite a loss for the character for those couple of years when we had Kyle Rayner out there doing stuff, and I couldn't see why Hal Jordan had to go away. Again, this goes back to my notion that there's no such thing as bad characters or bad takes. Just like The Flash, they kind of figured that they had run Hal Jordan's course. But you and Mr. Johns are proving there's plenty of life still in these characters.
Yeah, a lot of that is, again, before my time. I've never read any of those stories. You know, I've read Jeff Johns' run, and that's all the Green Lantern, really, that I've read. And well, not all the Green Lantern that I've read, but everything I've read has been since Jeff started. You know, I've read Green Lantern Corps and things like that, but I haven't gone back into the 90s or any of that, so I can't really speak to those kind of stories. But, yeah, I do think there's a lot to do with Hal Jordan still. And, you know, after Lights Out, which is the crossover we have coming up in October, there's already two major story arcs planned after that. And you know, I think there's a lot of different directions we could take the character, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about that Lights Out event?
Yeah, it's going to be a one-month crossover. It starts in Green Lantern 24, then it runs through Green Lantern Corps 24, New Guardians 24, and then Red Lanterns 24, and ends with Green Lantern Annual number 2. And it's going to be a story that links all those books together, and it's going to deal with this character, Relic, who is a survivor from the universe previous to ours, and he has this theory that the light that all the Corps are using comes from a reservoir, and when that reservoir runs out, the universe gets destroyed and is sort of reborn, and that's the life cycle of universes, if you will. And so he's coming into this universe to try to basically kill off all the lanterns who are draining the reservoir so that they won't harm the universe and move it closer to its death and you know, restart the cycle again. And so that's kind of his motives, and he, the Green Lantern Corps, is dealing with him, and he's a very tough antagonist, because he studied the emotional spectrum his entire life, and by doing so, he's learned how to combat it and how to defend himself against it. And so he's much different than a lot of the other villains that the Green Lantern Corps has gone up against.
So Relic doesn't necessarily see himself as a villain then?
No, he absolutely doesn't. No, and his theory has already been proven true as far as he's concerned. You know, he comes from the universe before ours, and he tried to speak to the lanterns of his universe, which were called Lightsmiths, and explain things to them diplomatically, and they just ignored him, and eventually that universe died. And so now that he's in our universe, he feels that he's tried the diplomatic route, and now he's going to try to do something more forceful and save this universe in any way he can.
Again, that sci-fi is in there. And one of the things I like, too, that you're doing is you're using the science fiction to show things about the character. And there's not necessarily black and white. There are shades of gray in it. So that's going to be fun. The whole Relic character fascinates me, because he's not, like I said, he's not necessarily a villain. He's actually trying to do something he thinks is right. And, you know, the mustache-twirling villains, I think, are old news. So I like that you're doing that, that there's not necessarily going to be – it's not necessarily good versus evil, and I like that. That's such a nice concept.
Yeah, he's you know, his methods may be abhorrent, you know, but there is some merit to what he does. And so, you know, that's part of the whole storyline.
Now, you're writing two Green Lantern books, right?
I write the Green Lantern, the main Green Lantern title, and then I co-plot Green Lantern Corps with Van Jensen, but he does all the scripting.
Okay. So, do you work together with the other people in the Green Lantern books? Because it sounds like you are, if you're going to have this big event that's going to tie.
Yeah, we all get together. You know, the editors get us all on the phone, or we get together sometimes at a convention. We talk through stories and ways that we can tie the books together, but still try to have them be, you know, have their own identities and stand on their own. So, yeah, you know, Van Jensen, who writes Green Lantern Corps, Charles Soule, who writes Red Lanterns, and Justin Jordan, who writes New Guardians, they're all really good writers. And so to be able to sit down in a room and talk story with them, and you know, it's always a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great fun. I think you're doing good stuff with Green Lantern, and I really like it, because the thing about Green Lantern to me is his nobility and the idea of him fighting fear, which I thought was a great idea. And it's fun to see you go in different directions and to see Green Lantern move in different places that people haven't really thought about before. So I think you're doing a great job with that, and I'm glad you're on it.
I appreciate that.
Now, are there other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
That's pretty much it for right now. You know, I do have some pitches in on some other things, and so I'm waiting to see how those things pan out, but it's nothing that I can really talk about at the moment.
Well, the good news is you're submitting stuff, and that's always a good thing.
Sure, yeah.
There's possible work coming down the road.
Yep.
So, I've got a question I'm just kind of curious about, and I don't know why I'm bringing this up with you, but it intrigues me. It used to be that creators used to sign exclusive contracts with companies, and they would get like healthcare out of it and other kinds of things. But I noticed like what you're doing is you're working for Valiant and you're working for DC and doing other things. Is that kind of the trend that you see happening forward, that you don't think that there'll be this signing of exclusive contracts so much as we had in the past?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I guess that would be a question really for the publishers and asking them how they prefer to do business. You know, I don't know. It's not really a discussion that I've had with anybody, you know?
Okay. All right. Well, I was just wondering whether or not you found it – you know, it gives you more freedom to do things with Valiant, to do things with DC. You don't necessarily have to be locked into one company's continuity. You can play in different sandboxes.
Sure, yeah. And you know, that's definitely a part of it. But, you know, I don't know. Who knows what the future is for exclusives, you know?
It's really good, but it's interesting to me that you also came in at a later point in your life. I understand from when I looked at Wikipedia, you had seen some comics at like barbershops and things, but it wasn't until you were working at like a border store that somebody recommended it and you got into Astro City. Are you buying the new Astro City that's been coming out recently?
Sure, yeah, I've definitely been reading it. Astro City will always have my loyalty, you know?
That's cool, because I think that DC is doing a smart thing. Not everything has to be in the New 52. I mean, you're getting to play in that sandbox, but it's kind of nice that he's got his own world and other continuity going on.
Absolutely.
Are there other books that you like that are coming out today?
I like Mind Management by Matt Kent. I like The
book.
Sixth Gun by Brian Hurt and Cullen Bunn.
Yeah.
Those are probably two of my favorites.
Those are great ones. I really like those a lot. I like Mouse Guard, too, because it's something different. And there's a book called Rust that I like really well, both from Archaea. And they're great, fun stuff. So as far as digital versus, I always like to ask people, too, as far as digital versus print, do you think that we're going to go exclusively digital somewhere down the road?
It's hard to say. I wouldn't surprise me, technology being what it is. I mean, for my preference, I prefer to read something I can hold in my hand, mostly because I'm on a computer all day working. So when I'm reading, I want to be able to not be on a computer, you know. But with iPads and things like that, it's not hard to foresee a future where things are primarily digital, you know.
Yeah, I worry about that because comic shops are kind of places where you can meet other people and people can suggest things to you. If it's just you and your computer, it's harder for you to get feedback and from other people.
Sure, yeah.
That's reliable anyway. And so I'm a little sorry to see this going, but I have to say I use digital occasionally to download stuff. If I can't find it at the store, I'll come home and I'll download it and I'll read it that way. So it's kind of cool. Well, I just thought as a science fiction type guy, you might have some ideas as to how that might progress going forward. Do you like a lot of science fiction as far as like TV shows go?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I do like science fiction. I haven't read a lot of science fiction books. I've read maybe 10 in my whole life, you know. But I do enjoy it as a genre, sure.
Yeah, because I'm the same way. I love science fiction. I love different takes on things and not following the standard path. Because, you know, love stories, it's a 50-50 shot. They'll either get together or they won't. And so for me, a science fiction story has a lot more variables going around, and I like that. And that's one of the things, too, I like about your writing is that you're tossing around a lot of stuff, and I'm really not able to figure out where you're going, and I kind of like that as a reader. I've read all these standard stuff before. I like to see something that I don't know what's going to happen, and so I appreciate you doing that, bringing us a new experience as you are.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, well, it's been good talking with you, Rob, and I wish you much success, and I hope that Valiant and your work on Green Lantern and stuff all goes very well, and hopefully I'll get a chance to talk with you again sometime in the future.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Let me give you some of the highlights of the comics that came out on Wednesday, September 25, at least to me. The first thing I want to talk about is a Monkey Brain Comics release, of course, monkeybraincomics.com, called Real West Number 1. It's kind of a fun book in that it tells Real West stories in a comics format. Now, of course, it's only 99 cents. It's written by John Arcudi with art by A.C. Zamudio. Of course, Arcudi is known for BPRD, and he writes a very intriguing tale. It's only told in a few pages, and I thought it was really good. Of course, monkeybraincomics.com is a favorite of mine, and I like a lot of the stuff they do. You get a chance to go there and particularly look up Real West, I think you'll enjoy it. I also wrote a review of Justice League 23.4, which has to do with the Secret Society of Supervillains. If you want to read that review, be sure to go back to majorspoilers.com and see what I said about it. Of course, I really loved it. I think it's going to be tied very heavily into the Forever Evil event going forward, so I highly recommend picking up that comic as well. I have to disagree somewhat with my colleague Chris Wilson, who wrote a review on Batman the Dark Knight number 23.4. I actually liked the book a lot better than he did. The interesting thing about it was he gave it 2.5 stars, and I would give it a lot higher grade than that because there's some interesting things that happen in the book and also some questions that need to be answered. The biggest question to me is that really the Joker's skin face that she found and is now wearing? If that's the case, what's the Joker doing? Can we see what he looks like now? I'm not sure what's going to happen regarding the Joker, so that was one of the biggest questions that was raised to me. I also like the fact that they didn't explain to us a lot about Dula. I think that she needs to be someone that we find things out about rather than is totally explained at the beginning. Chris really didn't care for the fact that they didn't give a lot of the names of the people that were involved with her. I have to say, I'd rather we find out as we go along than do that. And of course, she lies like a horse thief when she's talking to this head of an underground organization. And she manages, just like the Joker, to get people to believe her. It always kills me when the Joker makes people believe him because he's funny and he's wearing all these brightly colored clothes. I would never believe a word out of the mouth of this person, just like I wouldn't the Joker. But it's kind of interesting. Another thing that's interesting about this book is that there were problems with the 3D cover of it. And so what happened was very few of them actually got shipped. And so immediately it's gone up on eBay for $40 to $50. Now, the store I went to only had the regular covers, which was $2.99. But if I'd ever seen one, I would have probably grasped it right away. These kind of things go up for big sales on eBay and stuff like that. I would probably, instead of giving it 2.5, I would have likely given it 4 stars at least. Because I think it's such a good book and it's such an interesting character. She has absolutely nothing to do with the Joker, but she's a spiritual daughter in that way. Of course, you never know. We could find out later that the truth is she is the Joker's daughter, which would be a really interesting development. I also want to talk about The Wake, number 4 of 10. Scott Snyder, of course, is one of my very favorite writers in comics these days, and he's written this horror story that's taking place underwater. And boy, is it ever gripping. People live and die at a moment's notice, and I like that kind of thing. I thought things were really bad last issue when we got a whole bunch of these little underwater creatures showing up, but there's an even bigger surprise at the end of this issue, and I will not spoil it. It's just a great book. Mr. Snyder, as always, deserves credit for building up our expectations and then exceeding them. So The Wake, number 4 of 10, I would highly recommend that one. The last book I want to talk about is the Sinestro book, which took place in Green Lantern number 23.4. Sinestro has always been a good character for Hal Jordan to fight against, because Sinestro has always used fear, while Hal Jordan doesn't experience fear. Which, by the way, I want to mention is kind of funny. In the Forever Evil event, the Green Lantern from the alternate universe, who is called Powering, is a scaredy cat. I thought that was a nice bit of writing for there, to have him from an alternate universe be different from Hal Jordan. But getting back to Green Lantern number 23.4, I like the way that they described Sinestro's development on his homeworld and what he did there. Rather kind of creepy. This guy's a megalomaniac, and he really loves nothing better than putting other people in their place. Of course, right now, he's supposedly out of the DC universe, but I'll bet you we'll be seeing him again sometime soon. So as far as that book goes, I think that's a wonderful story. And those are my reviews this week.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. And now it's time for the latest news. Apparently, DC is farming out a lot of their characters to all the different networks. There are two of them that happened recently. The first one involved Constantine, which is possibly being picked up by NBC. And then there's also what looks to be Gotham Central going on to Fox. So it looks like we're going to see DC following Marvel's lead and having more of their properties on television, which isn't a bad thing. All the times that they'll appear, every one of them will be a commercial for one of the comics, just like Walking Dead has been for Image. So I think that's going to be interesting stuff. I'm curious to see what else could be turned into television shows, but we'll see as we go along. Of course, I'd like to see Batman back on the television screen, which would be fun, but he's busy with the movie, so he can't do that. Speaking of the Batman versus Superman movie, there are now rumors surfacing that Wonder Woman's going to appear in that. So that'll be a very interesting thing if she does. Not a bad idea to launch another character in that movie, which I'm sure is going to draw a lot of folks. I also wanted to mention, in the hour-long premiere for Big Bang Theory, they mentioned Spectacular Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus going into Peter Parker's body. Now, they didn't talk much about it, but I found it interesting that they mentioned that. They're trying to show that they're current with the comics. I still don't like that old guy's presence in the body of a young guy. It just creeps me out. There's also interesting Archie news in that GLAAD has selected Archie Comics' gay character Kevin Keller to serve as their Spirit Day ambassador for their annual anti-bullying campaign. On October 17th, Archie Comics, along with many other participating corporations, national landmarks, celebrities, and schools will go purple in a show of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth. Now, Mr. Keller was introduced in 2010 as the first gay character in Archie history, the same year that GLAAD initiated that Spirit Day event. Archie Comics publisher, co-CEO John Goldwater said, "We're delighted and thrilled that GLAAD has selected Kevin Keller as a Spirit Day ambassador. We've worked hard to make sure that Kevin stands for acceptance and equality, so this is a huge honor." Previous Spirit Day participants include the White House, Oprah, Ellen DeGeneres, Cher, Shaquille O'Neal, The View, The Talk, The Tonight Show, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Las Vegas Strip, and even George Takei. That was an obvious one. I'm sure this is what Archie Comics was hoping for when doing something that was a little controversial at the time. So we'll see how that goes. I'll be curious to see what kind of press coverage this gets. Also, this week saw the debut of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'll be talking a lot more about that later in the podcast. And one of the people given credit during the show was Jim Steranko. But he had some negative things to say about it, which I found kind of interesting. He said that the plot assumes the audience is cognizant of the Marvel Universe, as it regales viewers with a salvo of references established previously in the big screen efforts. Granted, Avengers may be the third highest grossing flick of all time, but recalling the details of last year's favorite may be too much to expect above a fanboy level. The show's creditors have gone on record to point out that the series is about ordinary people, somewhat echoing the Hitchcock approach, ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances, said Starenko. Perhaps in this case, ordinary may not be enough to warrant audience interest and loyalty moving forward. And he also complained that Nick Fury didn't appear. Although Fury, like Batman and Bond, has no superpowers, he's clearly superhuman, irresistible, indomitable, and invincible. The opener would have benefited immensely from a 15-second cameo or even a phone call from Samuel Jackson's Fury. For Starenko, the show's lead is comparable to New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and is no Fury. Could anyone understand the dialogue being delivered by the S.H.I.E.L.D. lab team? Did anyone feel punted into PC-ville by the hooded hero being black? And did we really need the rampant dueling ideologies? We all understand melodrama has its conveniences, contrivances, and coincidences, but it doesn't seem reasonable to expect a certain transcendence with the kind of creative talent behind the series. Of course, Starenko is known for his comics work, but he also has spent time in Hollywood on several occasions. Moving forward, we'll see whether his suggestions are followed up on. And finally, I have to mention a really interesting development as far as the Batman Arkham Origins video game goes. Recent news came out that you can play Adam West's Batman and John Paul Valley, formerly Azrael, as Batman in the game. Now, the Adam West Batman is really bulked up compared to Adam West when he was on there, and he's also unshaven, which is kind of a different look for him. I watched the preview, and I don't see any sign of his voice, which would be kind of a sad thing if that's the case. And of course, Nightfall Batman is pretty much into blowing up everything in his path, so no surprise there. But the Adam West thing kind of fascinates me. It would be fun if they would actually get his voice in the game, or at least somebody that sounds like him, although I'm sure Mr. West would prefer to do it himself. So Batman Arkham Origins, you can be Adam West or Jean-Paul Valley. And that's the news for this week. As far as previews go, the books that are coming out on October the 2nd include, from DC Comics, Action Comics number 24. Of course, now the Villains Month is over and we're back to regular numbering. Batman Black and White number 2. There's a Batman Court of Owls book and mask set for about $25. That's going to be fascinating. Batman Odyssey, the trade paperback, for about $20. Written and drawn by Neil Adams. Then there's Batwing 24. DC Comics Essential Batman number 1 for $1. That'll be interesting to see what's included. Then there's Detective Comics 24. Earth 2 number 16. Forever Evil number 2, which will probably be the book of the week. Then there's Green Arrow 24. Green Lantern 24. He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 6. JLA Earth 2 Deluxe Edition Hardcover for $25. Swamp Thing 24. Trillium number 3. And Trinity of Sin The Phantom Stranger number 12. From IDW we get Doctor Who Classics number 5. Doctor Who Prisoners of Time number 9. There's also a Doctor Who series hardcover with Winter's Dawn Season's End for $50. You've got to be a pretty big fan to get that one. From Image, we get Bedlam number 9. What a scary little book that is. I like it a lot. Invincible Universe number 7. Lazarus number 4. And Morning Glories number 32. From Marvel, there's All New X-Men number 17, which a lot of people still really like. Then from other companies, we get a Ben 10 Omniverse graphic novel, Volume 1, for $7.99. That's not bad. But one of my very favorite books coming out from Dynamite is Black Bat number 6. I hope you've been reading that. That is such a good book. Very different, yet very similar to Batman, so I like it quite a lot. Then there's Garfield number 18, based on the comic strip, of course. There's a Jim Henson biography for $35. That's a hardcover. It really interests me. Then there's Mark Waid, Green Hornet number 6. A book called The Mocking Dead, which of course is having fun with The Walking Dead. The first issue is out with a Yellow Hazard second printing for $3.99, and a second issue for $3.99 as well. And a book I've really been looking forward to called Monstrosity, and it's graphic novel for $14.99. Great, 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 great book. I had a chance to read part of it, and I wrote a review, so I hope you'll pick it up and enjoy it, especially if you like horror. Then we get Shadow Man number 11 from Valiant, and Quantum and Woody number 4 also from Valiant. And those are the books coming out on October 2.
For years, the truth was hidden. People from other times, other worlds, heroes. But now we know. They're among us.
What does SHIELD stand for, Agent Ward?
Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
And what does that mean to you?
It means someone really wanted our initials to spell out SHIELD.
Yes, that's the trailer from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which debuted this week on ABC. In fact, they ran it twice. They ran it in its normal time slot on Tuesdays at 8, but then they also ran it again on Thursday night at 8. So they had a lot of confidence in the show. And of course, Thursday at 8 is up against Big Bang Theory. I'm not sure how that's going to do. But as far as the other things go, that was a pretty good deal for that. In fact, there's early word out that, according to The Hollywood Reporter, the episode averaged a 4.6 rating among adults 18 to 49 and brought in a total of 11.9 million viewers in the original time slot. And those numbers actually topped the usually strong The Voice on NBC, as well as CBS's NCIS. So that's pretty good. That's off to a great start. So what did I think about the episode? I thought the effects were particularly good. I liked all the ways that they did things. I was a little bothered by the car that flew like the Back to the Future car, but I think that they're alluding to, looked like the Fantastic Car, things that are in Marvel as well. And I also liked the way that they did things regarding the character that was being followed. He had a lot of good effects surrounding him, so that made his character believable. And I liked that real well. As far as the acting goes, I wasn't all that impressed by it. It felt like we were trying to be dry and witty and kind of wry at the same time, but it came across pretty flat to me. I'd like to see them actually be a little more animated. The Fitz and Gerald team was actually the most interesting of the bunch, it seemed to me. And there were a lot of twists and turns as far as the plot goes. You know, we weren't sure that the girl who originally talks to the superhero is actually working for S.H.I.E.L.D., but later on we find out that she is. So, as far as plotting goes, there were some interesting twists and turns. Almost too many for me, which is hard to believe because I love twists and turns as far as plotting goes. Overall, I would give it about a B-. Like I said, the effects are an A. I think the acting is a C. And other things were pretty average as it is. The big test for the show is going to be next Tuesday. How many people watched it this week and are going to come back? That's going to be a big test to say. But there's been a lot of mixed reaction online. Some people have said that it wasn't all that great. Some people just loved it and thought it was a perfect follow-up to the Avengers movie. Some people said there were actors that they didn't like. If they can steer the show more like X-Files with better acting than from the supporting cast, the show will be a bigger hit, said one person. It's going to continue on. Question's going to be, of course, is there going to be enough to support it to get a second season? That'll be the interesting thing. First season's pretty much assured with the ratings that they got. Anyway, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is off to a strong start, and we'll see how it goes from here.
We have a couple of hours at most. There's no way that we could
Don't ever tell me there's no way! Don't touch Lola.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have more news, reviews, previews, and interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.